Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teach Me, Teacher, a podcast for educators, where we, the teachers, become students ourselves. I'm your host, Jacob Chastain, and today it is my pleasure to bring you the one and only Esther Brunat of Instagram fame. If you haven't watched her stories, she is hilarious. She does all kinds of, she gets herself into all these crazy antics. It's amazing to watch. But we are talking all about student relationships, and more importantly, how to use those relationships to drive and push students to new and great horizons. All righty, Esther, how are we doing today?
We're doing so good.
Man, I like your energy. You fired me up after a long day.
I love that. I love hearing that. That's like my fave.
Well, that's what you're known for, right? The people that, it's just your energy. It's just always, you're just pouring it out. Is that just your constant mode or?
It is when I'm outside of my house. Like when I'm in public, I'm ready to be in public, I'm ready, got the extrovert side of me switched on. But then when I'm at home, I like don't even talk.
No, I get that too. Like, you know, if I'm in front of people or in a group, like it'll turn on, right? And then
yes, exactly.
But once people are gone, it's like, all right, leave me alone. I'm in my hole. You cannot mess with me.
That is precisely what it is. And I think people would be shocked. Like, if they saw me at my house, they'd be like, what's wrong with you? Are you sick?
Okay, so you are, for full disclosure, especially if Joe's listening. So Joe, after I did the podcast with Mr. D, he goes, all right, Jacob, you need Esther on the podcast. And I was like, I hadn't followed you at the time. And I go, oh, who's Esther? Who is this? You know, when people start recommending, that's when I get excited. And I, get on Instagram and I check you out. I'm like, oh, okay. He goes, look, get her on the show. It's going to be amazing. So after I followed you for like 5 seconds, I was like, oh, this has got to happen. So we were able to do it pretty quickly in terms of when I recorded him. So, when it comes to you, right? Because I got told about you through him, but when you're describing yourself to other people, do you talk about the Instagram thing or do you go teacher first? Like, is Instagram really a part of your personality, like profile when you explain to people, or is it the teacher thing?
I've never been asked that question before. So when you're asking me, like, if I'm talking to somebody else, does that personality automatically, is that what shines out? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, a little bit. Like, is it like that? Because people are people. Like, you know, we talked about branding, right? On that, on Joe's podcast.
Yes, I remember that. Mm-hmm.
And you have, there's a certain sense. Like, when you turn on the Instagram thing, like you just people adapt a personality to whatever it is. And if you do it long enough, that becomes your brand, right?
Right.
Is that an accurate representation of how you are in the classroom? This persona that you have there.
I would say it's pretty close. I mean, sometimes I have to give notes, sometimes we have to like, okay, this is example number one of the Pythagorean theorem, blah, 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 you know? So, I mean, there's that side of me, but when I'm, getting the kids to do work or we're just starting class or they're telling me stories, like, yeah, that's pretty much who I am. And a lot of times I'm up there like cracking my own jokes and laughing at my own jokes. And the kids are like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah, you got to fuel that own happiness, man. You know, if you're not enjoying your own self, then no one's going to.
Right. That's what I say. I'm like, if it doesn't make me laugh, then who cares?
That's hilarious. So let's go for people who do not know who you are. Okay. What do you teach? Where are you at in the world? What's kind of your, what's your elevator pitch for yourself?
My elevator pitch. So I am from sunny South Florida and, I grew up here, moved here when we were about 3 years old. I'm a Boston native, if that means anything. And, My parents are Haitian immigrants, so they moved here in their 20s, got married, and then had all three of us. I went to school in Broward County, grew up in Broward County, blah, 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 blah. This is my sixth year teaching. And my first 3 years I spent overseas in Panama City, Panama, teaching at a small Christian school over there, which was awesome. And then I moved back home 3 years ago at this point, and now I teach at my rival high school where I graduated. Where I didn't graduate, but our rival from there. And yeah, that's basically me in a nutshell. I teach math. I teach math, and I tell my kids at the beginning of every year, even if you don't like math at the end of the year, I promise you'll like my class. And I tell them at the end of the year when they leave, so next week they're going to get this question. I'm like, did I make good on my promise? So let's hope they say yes.
isn't that funny that so many teachers approach their discipline like that, right? You know, I teach reading and writing for sixth graders, and a lot of my mm-hmm. students don't come to me, readers and stuff like that. And, you know, the thing I go to is, you know, I'm going to get you. You know, if I don't get you to love books by the end, you are going to love doing what we're doing in here at least.
And it, right.
Like, it's so funny. Like, I feel like social studies teachers do that. They're like, all right, I'm going to get history. You know, and it's just, were you someone who didn't like math growing up, or were you always a math person?
It depended on the season of life. In elementary school, I had a great fifth grade teacher, and Miss Dyra Lewis, woo woo, I keep throwing her name out there on social media. Hopefully, like, one day it's gonna get back to her because I can't find her. Anyway, scored like the 99th percentile in the state or something crazy like that, right? And then I went to middle school, bombed all my classes, and then I went to high school. And for some reason, some switch went on, and I was like, I'm going to ace all this stuff. And I got all A's and B's. And then I hit pre-calculus, like, senior year, and got a D, like, out of the blue. So it really, like, it really depended on, like, where I was, my teacher, like, all this kind of stuff. But I ended up becoming a math teacher because I was at a community college that had just gained an education program, and they were doing math and science. And ironically enough, I had just failed accounting and, like, came to the realization that I was, like, not going to sit at a desk for the rest of my life anyway. There's no way I was going to make that happen. So I was, like, I was pretty good at math, you know. I bet I could teach it. You know, I love – and I think I just love teenagers so much that because I did camps with my church and youth group, all that stuff. So I was, like, let's just put these two things together. and
you were in it.
Yeah, and I was in it, you know. And I think one of the reasons that helps me out is that I can sympathize with the failing student. I think a lot of times if you're too smart or you're, like, too good at something, you can't sympathize with somebody who struggles, right? So because I struggled in middle school, a little bit in high school, my fair share in college, I'm like, yeah, I get that you made a mistake. Do it again.
Yeah, no, I totally, you know, when I'm sitting with my students, you know, I tell them all the time because I was a trash student, right? I did, mm-hmm. I mean, I pretty much failed every math class in high school, and I just had to retake them in summer class, at least one semester, almost, like, except for, like, geometry, right? I was just that guy. And right. You know, the only class I did good was English, but I kind of barely did good. You know, I thought I did better, but I've worked – when you work in the district that you went to school in, I've worked with my ex-teachers, and they go, you weren't that good, you know? And it's like, you know, you were that kid we kind of had to push a little bit. So even my own delusions, I thought I was good, but I really wasn't in most of the classes. So – and, you know, I tell them these stories, and I'm like, guys, like, you know, I teach pre-AP sixth graders, so – I'm dealing with, you know, the brightest of the bright, right? Or at least the kids that are doing right. The hard work to get there. So I'm pushing them, and they're, you know, they'll fail a lot because I'm trying to get them to the next level. And I'm like, guys, mm-hmm. I sucked. It's okay. Failing's a part of life, but I'm going to make you do it again, right? We got
to
do this.
I think it's so important for kids to learn how to fail early. I really think that there's, like, something golden about that. I'm not really sure what it is. It's just a theory I have, but sometimes you get a kid who, like, it was just naturally inclined academically their whole life. And then when something becomes hard, they don't know how to handle it later. They don't know how to, like, make it happen. I think trash teachers make the best, trash students make the best teachers.
I mean, well, I mean, it's probably true because, I mean, there's a reason why, you know, the like business people who are like the really rich, right? Not like even like, mm-hmm. like not Bezos, like we know him, but like the people in the background that you never hear about, like there's a reason they don't go out and talk. It's probably because they don't have, no one wants to hear what they have to say because they're on such a different level, right? They don't go out and teach business classes because they're not good speakers, not good teachers, but they're smart enough to, you know, run the world or whatever they're doing. So, and that's, but what's fun to your point though, like this is where, you know, I think a lot of reflection comes from like to teachers, because I think a lot of people get into teaching because they're like, oh, you know, I'm really good at history. I know my stuff. And then they, you know, they get into the classroom and it's a different beast, right? Being smart at something does not always equal you can tell someone about it and they're going to get it.
Agreed.
So when you, so let's connect this to this relationship idea. So you're, you know, being able to connect to kids on multiple levels is super challenging when it comes to effectively doing it. One of the things I really want us to work ourselves through, because I feel like a lot of teachers struggle with this, is I feel like you have two types of teachers here with relationships. You got one mm-hmm. who is like so disconnected that they really don't know how to connect to certain kids. That's our tardy bell. Give me a second. That's what happens when you podcast out of school. I'm a real teacher. Life. I know. For anyone who doubted, right?
Right.
So, yeah. So, on one level, you have teachers who are disconnected for whatever reason. They don't connect to teenagers or even younger kids. And then that's one issue. But then you have the other one who, you know, they can connect to kids and they can talk to them, but mm-hmm. they cross into, like, friend zone. You know what I mean? It's like you're no longer the teacher or whatever, the boundary gets crossed and blurred, and then the kids, you know, they're like, oh, you're so cool, but they're not respecting you or listening to anything you're saying.
Right, right.
So when you started in the class, was this a challenge for mm-hmm. you?
I would say it wasn't a challenge for me, but I will say it's because I came in as a teacher first. So before I introduced Chill Esther, or Chill Miss Brunette, whatever. before I introduced that person, I came in as a teacher first. And that's because when I was in student teaching, my professor came to observe me. I think I was in a middle school classroom at the time. And she was like, she like did not like what she saw. She was happy with like the lesson and the content. But she was like, you need to get your class together. Like, and I remember taking that so to heart that I was, by the time I graduated, I was like, by any means necessary, like I will make sure that I know how to run my classroom and run it well. So I came in like all the Harry Wong procedures. So I came
in, freaking Wong, yeah. Man.
I know.
I think that might be the first time he's ever come up on the podcast.
I know. And I look back and I'm like, well, you're intense. Like,
that's so funny.
And I know like there's this whole conversation happening, at least in the Instagram teacher world, about the word classroom management and like what it means now. And but, you know, when you were in college, there was a whole class called classroom management. Like, you know, like how are you going to control your kids or whatever behavior? La, 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 la. But so I came in, I had a script, I practiced it, I did not smile, people told me not to smile.
Don't smile till Christmas.
Exactly, right? So I came in as that person, but it takes way more work for me to be that person than it does to be the relational person. So as my first year of teacher went on, and I was, you know, going to bed at night saying, Esther, you were kind of loose. You were kind of lax today. You got to be better tomorrow. I would literally have those conversations with myself. But then as I started to get involved in after school activities and clubs and kind of do non-academic things with the students, that's when the relational part started to happen. But it wasn't intentional. It was just something that happened naturally. And by the end of my first year, I had realized that that was my strength. And I had the pleasure of looping with my kids. So with those first 3 years of teaching, I looped with all of my students because it was a small school and I was the only math teacher. So I taught all the math. And so by the end of those 3 years, I was like, whoa, you know, I wanted to teach online and people would come up to me and be like, you need to be in the classroom. Like, what are you trying to do with your life? And I was like, oh, I guess, because sometimes that's what happens. The thing that you're so good at, you take it for granted. And you don't realize it's a strength because it just comes so naturally to you.
I see, I'm one of the teachers who, like, my first year, like, if I could travel back in time to watch myself, like, I mean, I had kids climbing out of windows, you know, I had, I mean, everything that could have happened to a first year teacher, it happened, right?
And oh, like, my gosh.
You know, I just remember my first observation and my principal, you know, she was a nice lady. You know, I'm still friends with her, but she was sitting there and just watching it burn, right? Because she can't step in. And I just remember there was a moment where our eyes connected and we both just knew. And it was like, well, I tried, you know, and it was, but it, you know, I'm, you know, cause I am, you know, I have that relational piece too. Like I can jump in and, be, you know, I can talk to them and I can relate to what they're saying,
right.
Do all those things. But like that control piece and the classroom manager piece, I had no idea. And I came in it through a different avenue too. So like I hadn't subbed before. I hadn't done anything like in the class. So it was like 8th grade social studies, let's go. And they just pushed me. And it, I mean,
wow.
It was a thing. And, you know, I learned that way. I like trial by fire. It's kind of how I like to learn. But mm-hmm. I mean, oh my, I mean, it was rough. But like, so you went in, you were already tough, right? Or
I went in tough and then loosened the reins and learned that relationship is really the real, that's the secret sauce.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk about that. So you have, so when you talk, like your philosophy of, you know, mm-hmm. getting kids to rise to the occasion, because math is fairly difficult, right? It's one of the notorious subjects of being real hard, right?
Yeah. You know,
at least that's the perception for students when they walk into math classrooms. Like when you're working on building those relationships, like really, what is your idea? What's your game plan? So let's think about next year, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're going into your classroom. Is it rules and expectations, then relationships? Like, how do you think about this process of building those relationships with those kids so you can start getting them to be involved in the academics?
I want my students to respect me, but I think what I learned this year is the first thing I really want my students to know is that I care. I think that took care of, I mean, so many issues, I think, this year. I cannot recall one single time a student, you know, stepping to me at a line in the terms of that they thought they were going to run this instead of me or whatever. And I've had those issues in the past where I've had to, you know, be big and whatever, whatever. And I think this year, that was one of my goals at the beginning of the year, is to make sure all of my students knew that I cared, that I was going to respect them whether or not they gave it to me. And I think it made the relationship process a world of a difference. The reason why I wanted to do that is because I can remember, speaking of classroom management, I can remember in that class that I had, it was a textbook called The Caring Classroom. And my professor opened up with, okay, so do you guys think caring is a strategy? Like, can you teach people to care? Can you use caring? And I remember this one guy in the front was like, no. He's like, absolutely not. And I was intrigued. I was like, I don't know. That seems kind of odd. And she made us think about who our favorite teacher was. So we all told stories, and I told the story about my 5th grade teacher, Daira Lewis. And because this lady gave me her glasses, I started to go blind in the 5th grade. She gave me her glasses. And then when my parents took me to go get glasses, I got some just like hers because I wanted to be her, you know? And when everybody was done telling their stories, the teacher was like, did anybody mention knowledge? did anybody mention degrees? Did anybody? And I was like, whoa. Like, the teachers that everybody remembered were teachers, like, the way teachers cared about them and the way the teachers made them feel. So I was like, yo, my kids might not remember how to factor a trinomial, but they're going to remember whether or not Miss Brunat, you know, really cared about them. And so from day one, that's what it was. There was no, you have to do this, you have to do that. Like, I do have rules and procedures for my own sanity, but I wasn't trying to be bigger than them like I have in the past. And it's made me be able to be more myself.
You know, you hit on, you know, a couple really strong points. You know, I did a whole episode talking about for Teacher Appreciation the first season about all the teachers that, you know, I really respected. And it really wasn't in, you know, and that cared for me. And they were all the ones, you know, it wasn't really the academics, right? It was the people who were there and they supported me and they did all these things, even when I was a butthole in high school and did all the things that I did, right? And they were always around, you know. And but this idea of, like, I'm always shocked when I run into an educator who's like, you know, for me, it's books, right? And I feel like one of my main jobs, you know, along with all the standards and stuff, the main job is to get a kid to realize the power of literature and to just love reading. I don't care if it's Diary of a Wimpy Kid, comic books, whatever. If I can get them to want to read on their own without anyone telling them to do, I consider that year a success. And I run into people and they're like, well, our job isn't to create a love of reading. Our job is to get them to know these standards and pass a test. And I'm like, what happened to you when you were a kid? What is wrong with you? And there's teachers like that too. They're like, well, my kid doesn't need to love my class. They don't need to like me. They need to pass and they need to learn this. And I'm like, I mean, how is that working? You know, how is that working for you? Right. Like when, so from your perspective though, like, you know, this is just a off the top of my head question. Like, why do you think people are resistant to this emotional piece of teaching? Like, I feel like it's kind of looked down upon in a lot of circles.
I think it's because it's exhausting. If I'm being completely honest, like, I know what I give to my students emotionally. And that's why at the end of the year, we all want to hibernate for however many weeks of summer vacation we have. Because, and especially if you're a mom and a father and you've got another place to go after that and pour into some more, looking at those little people as human beings, that each and every one of them has their own quirks, their own specialties, their own, it's a lot to deal with. And I think that's why it's easier to turn off that switch and walk into the classroom, treat it, hey, this is my job, this is what we're doing, and clock out, than it is to really invest and say, you know, I care about you. What do you need today? What do you need from me today? How do I connect with you today? It's a whole nother layer of, on top of teaching curriculum and standards and making sure they learn what they should be learning in your class. That's my opinion.
No, I think you're right on point. I'm reading a book, or I read a book called 180 Days by Penny Kittle, English person. She, one of the things she talks about is responsive teaching and like looking at your kids and going, you know, what do they need right now? Like, you know, today, real world example, right? I had, this boy and a girl. They've been, you know, sixth grade, quote, dating for however long, right? several months, right? They're the anomaly of sixth grade. It's usually sixth grade relationship lasts a day, 3 days, a week, whatever.
Right.
But they're the power couple, right? And things have been rocky. And, you know, but I found myself today counseling this girl on how to break up with this boy and do it in a respectable way. Because, you know, she was like, all the whatever, typical sixth grade drama. But, you know, she wanted honest feedback. And I told her, you know, but having those conversations, right, teaching people how to deal with these issues, right? I mean, they're young. They've never had to break up before, right? And we take that for granted. And, you know, it's like, it's, you know, it's funny. It's sixth grade relationships. But it's a real world thing, right? If they don't learn it now, you know, they're going to go off and have trouble with that when they're older, when it does matter, when there are consequences for, you know, being a shady person in a relationship and stuff like that. So, but like, that's the stuff that we don't, I think, like, that gets so overlooked when we're talking about what it means to be a teacher, because that, no, that wasn't a standard. Yeah, they didn't do some of the work they do because they were dealing with that. Yeah, it pulled me away from something because I was dealing with it. But you know what? I feel like I was a better teacher today because I did that than if I would have just ignored it.
Right.
You guys, I can't even express how awesome Esther is as a human being. I know you got that energy vibe from this episode. She is so next level, not even funny. I'm pretty much going to make her my best friend. So that's how that's going to go. But no, so on a much serious note, I hope you guys got so much out of this episode, because I know I did, you know, especially listening back, you know, especially at the end of the year, which is where everyone is. For the most part, is, you know, we can't forget the real reason why we are in that classroom. Yeah, we have a job to do. And yes, a lot of us really do love our content. You know, I talk about, you know, how much I love books all the time, and that connects to what I teach and all this other stuff. But, you know, the reason I'm in that room is because I truly believe kids need quality adults in their lives, and that even if they already have those adults, I mean, they need more and more and more, and people who are willing to take that emotional investment and give it back to their students. I truly believe that that is something that really drives our profession, why our profession's not going to die out anytime soon, because it is needed in the world. We need more people to care about young people and to really be concerned about them. You know, the jump on social media any time of day and you can find a post within 5 minutes of people bashing the younger generation and bashing the new generation of millennials and all this other stuff. And, you know, it's really sad, because what do people think that's going to do? What happens when you bash an entire generation for something, you know, for misconceptions or for other things, that other biases that they have? You know, we need, as adults, we need to be looking back at that generation and helping them and help guide them through the world. And no, they might not make the choices that we want them to make. And they might decide that they have different values than what we have, just the way we did. We decided we wanted different values than the generation that came before us and the generation before that. But that's how life is, and we can't not give them that emotional connection that they need, because I think a lot of the problems that we're seeing in society, you know, specifically in education, specifically with violence that's happening in our educational communities, I think a lot of that can be traced to not giving people the compassion and not giving them the emotional tools to deal with reality. Because life is hard. Like, I think it's really easy to be like, oh, suck it up, you know, back in my day, we blah, blah, blah. You know, but a lot of people don't have those emotional tools, and it could probably be argued that because of the digital world that we live in the world of social media, that we're actually, a lot of us are missing out on learning these emotional skills that it takes to live in the real world. I know for me, when I was in high school, this is really when all the social media and stuff really started coming into play, and I still, you know, I'm still learning things as an adult, how to deal with things emotionally. I can only imagine what it's like as a younger kid who's lived in this digital world where everything is fake and everything is processed, and you have to take 100 selfies before you post one. And if that's the only world you ever see, then you're going to miss out on the real emotional stuff that happens, and how to deal with anger, how to deal with loss, how to deal with being rejected, how to deal with you loving someone and they don't love you back. How to do, you know, insert whatever emotional problem. I think, you know, these are the hidden standards that we have as educators, is to give our students tools to be able to navigate the world as best they can. That does not mean we control them. That does not mean we force them to have our beliefs. It does not mean we force them to do what we want them to do. It means we support them the way caring adults should support the younger generation. For everything else, ladies and gentlemen, I need you to go to teachmeteacherpodcast.com, find all of our social media, follow me on Instagram, where I am heavily focusing my attention. You can like us over there on Facebook at Teach Me Teacher as well. Join the 32,000 educators that are over there supporting the podcast. Go to the Instagram page, where it's more of a personal look at me, but you also get behind the scenes look at some of the stuff that's happening on Teach Me Teacher. That is at Teach Me Teacher Host. I love that you guys are sharing the podcast on your stories. I love seeing where you're listening to it. You guys taking pictures of you in the car, saying that you listen to it on a run, like all that stuff. Amazing. I absolutely love seeing where you guys are listening to the podcast. It fuels me. It makes me want to do this day in and day out. It makes me want to record things like this on Memorial Day, right? A holiday. But you know what they say? If you love what you do, you're never going to work a day in your life. And I truly believe that about being a teacher and doing this podcast. I love talking to you guys. I love everything. So if you could, if you loved this episode, if you liked this episode, if you got something from this one, go shout out Esther, especially if you're not following her. Go hit that follow button. She is hilarious. You will not be disappointed with that experience. But also share this episode, share the podcast, give a shout out to whatever episode you're listening to right now. It doesn't have to be this episode. It could be episode 1, 5, 10, whatever. Does not matter. But when you share it, it helps us find and reach out to other educators and support them. So if you think this podcast is doing something for education, go out, share the episode, hit review on iTunes, give us a star rating, all of those things help us keep doing what we're doing. And by us, I mean me and all the guests that are on here, because you know it's a one-man show in terms of production and everything else that's going on. We have so many great episodes lined up for season 3. Season 2 is coming to a close, as you know we do in the summer. Season 3 is going to blow the roof off of this place. I want to talk more about that, but I'm going to save that for part 2 with Esther. For everything else, ladies and gentlemen, have a good one.